There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday edition of the show. I want to say before we get to this hour and our guest, Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us, I got this note from the folks here with the driver's license offices, and we've talked about it in the news, but obviously got word from Dick Matranga to tell me that not everybody has heard the news, so I will repeat. Driver's license offices statewide closed yesterday and have been closed today. They do have plans to reopen today, but they have still been closed. Alabama Law Enforcement Agency is doing a revitalization of their current system. And when it comes back, it's going to be bigger and bigger, better than ever, says the memo here. But that is, that's been going on. So the people, kids out there that just turned 16 that are just chomping at the bit yesterday to get the driver's license, sorry, you got to pay attention to the news out there. So just an update on that news story. You can get more by checking out our Facebook page and more information on that. All right, as I mentioned at the end of Jeff's show, it is great to have this man back, former Congressman AL1, and a person that I turn to for a lot of broader thought about what happens in Washington and around the world, and a person I consider a friend, Bradley Byrne, joining us in the studio. Good to see you again.
Sean, it's great to be back.
It's a harbinger, though. It's strange. I started thinking about it. You and I were talking about the possibility of what might happen in a conflict between Russia and Ukraine with the staging on the border and all that. And I don't know how many hours had gone by since we had talked before the war truly started. And then you and I had scheduled this last week and renewed, you and I were both talking about that. The battle in the Donbass, I would say a renewed offensive in the Donbass for Russia, but that's an area that has been part of this conflict a long time.
Yeah, back in 2014. I think I'd been in Congress 2 months. And Russia got through the Winter Games, Winter Olympic Games, and then boom, they invaded, took the Crimea and invaded the Donbass region. I didn't even know where it was. I had to get my staff to get a map for me to figure out.
Right.
And the next thing, you know, I knew we were just inundated with this stuff. So what Russia did back in 2014 was annex Crimea. Then they used little green men, is what they call them.
I've heard that. Okay, so I've heard this term used, the little green men, a lot in that. And those were what, paramilitary or?
Well, we think they were Russian regular soldiers. But they just put in these special green uniforms and pretended
like
that
really
they were.
We're really not Russians. We're just some local Ukrainians that love Russia. Okay.
Right. Not. Probably not true, or not true for most of them anyway. So that was the moment, late February, early March 2014, when they started this effort to take the easternmost part of Ukraine that's called the Donbass region, two provinces, Luhansk and Donetsk.
Right.
And so they've been working on it now for 8 years.
I mean, seeing the video and the pictures and the stories out there since 2014, it was trench warfare of some sort.
Oh, yeah.
Trenches dug in, almost like a Maginot Line where it's just back and forth and back and forth. Right?
Yeah, it's been pretty brutal. But what Russia's doing now is they're coming in with, they're no longer pretending the little green men anymore. They're just coming in direct forces.
Right.
And you see what they've done to Mariupol, that port city. They just leveled it.
It is a Mariupol, while it's extremely bloody on a military side, it's a humanitarian disaster.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, truly.
At least 20,000 people dead. We've got a bunch of people trapped in an old steel factory that the Russians are just going to absolutely just drive it into the ground.
And the Ukrainians, have said, you told us way back, and we'll revisit this, when you met with them all those years ago, you said these folks are serious. Tells me they're serious, too, not only that their leader stayed, and we talked about that back then, but that these soldiers have been given, Now, do you trust the Russians or not? But they've been given this chance to walk away, do whatever, and they say,
Live free or die. That's their motto.
But it's a bravery even beyond that, because it's not like, okay, I'll fight another day. I'll pull back to another region of Ukraine. I'll fight you another day. They're like, we're not leaving tar on their heels. Right. You know,
this is, we're going to stay here and fight every inch of this territory. And this is what the Russians still haven't gotten. You can tell they still don't get it. They still don't get that these people are going to fight them every inch of the way. They literally, two of their top military people came out yesterday or today and said, well, it's the West problem that's going on because they're providing these arms to the Ukrainians, and that just encourages them. Let me just say something, Sean. If we ain't giving them a single weapon, they'd be throwing rocks at the Russians.
Yeah.
They hate the Russians, and they're going to fight to the end.
Well, there is this narrative, right? And I hear it, and I want to make sure I look at things from all sides, and it's this idea that, and we'll get into the specifics here, but the U.S. supplying, the latest has been 800 million dollars additional here in the last week of military aid, lethal aid to Ukraine we are costing Ukrainian lives because we are continuing a war that they can never win. Now, I understand this is part of the Russian message, but is it worth exploring? Are we there's the inevitability that Russia wins and we're just going to make more Ukrainian blood spill on the way there?
Well, I don't think it's inevitable at all. Let's face it, the Ukrainians repulsed the attack on their capital.
I mean, they repulsed it. Heck of a story.
Okay? Drove them back out of the country.
Whatever the Russians want to say, I think all of us wherever you come down on this, you do got to believe that the plan was to take Kyiv. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
This idea that, we're just going there, that was part of our demilitarization, then we're going home.
You don't move that much equipment, right. That many people.
Yeah, the Ukrainians won that one.
No, the Ukrainians beat them. And so, now, this is a different phase of the war. The eastern part of the country is different from Kyiv. I mean, it is. I mean, they've got better ground to run their heavy equipment on in the eastern part of the country.
And that's a geography discussion. You talked about that, kind of the open steppe or the...
A lot more open, a lot firmer ground. They had really bad ground up there near Kyiv. But they're also closer to their own supply lines because they're real close to the Russian border. So they're in a much better position to get some sort of success where they are. And now that they've closed off Mariupol... They've essentially gotten themselves in a position where they can start freeing up some of those battle groups to start working on the rest of the Donbass. But make no mistake about it, the Ukrainians are going to fight for every square inch of the Donbass.
From your time with House Armed Services Committee, the idea of how far we will go, I know you're not in it right now, but you have a sense that nobody else in this building or in this town really currently has. How far do we go? Our level of commitment to the greater war, the specific war now from the Dnieper River to the east.
Right.
We're talking about 800 million and a billion. Is there a point where Congress says, nah? Because I want to ask you about the other side too. I hear a lot of saber rattling over the weekend. Senator Coons was talking, but what's your feeling, Congressman?
I think we're going to go pretty far with them on providing conventional arms. Here's the question. Is there a red line for the Russians, for us with regard to the Russians, if they use chemical weapons, if they use a tactical nuclear weapon? Is that a red line for us where we go further than that and we start saying we're going to clear the skies? I don't know. And I don't think anybody can say right now because it's almost too unreal to believe that they would do that. But I'm telling you, Vladimir Putin has no limits.
Is there anything to study from Syria with the Russians and their involvement in Syria? You talk about chemical weapons. You also, it was somewhat a proxy war, but then the Russians fully there, even though we're fully there too. That's a whole other subject.
You can learn some from Syria, but remember, they were finding pockets in Syria.
Okay.
They weren't attacking an entire country. And the Syrian people were willing to fight back, but they didn't have a whole lot to work with to fight back. The Ukrainians are not only willing to fight back, we and other NATO countries have given a lot of weapons to fight back with. You know what? They've been pretty darn good at using their equipment. And so I think the Russians are learning a bitter lesson here, but Putin will do anything. There's nobody in Russia that can walk in the room and say, we got to stop.
Let's talk about that. That was one of the things that people have come to me after you and I talked last time and that stuck out to them. You and I had a discussion. I was asking you, how far is the gap between Putin and the next person in command, an understanding of their structure, because I only know it as an American and the American structure and how close the speaker is or Senate president is or the vice president is or the cabinet. Explain to folks how big that gap is in Russia.
It's huge. There's nobody that has any ability to have any control over him and not much of ability to persuade him. He's already made up his mind about this war. And no one's going to get him to change his mind. There's one person that could. Xi Jinping, the head of China.
Yeah.
If he said, all right, that's it, time to wrap it up, I think Putin would have to do it.
If you're Xi, why don't you just, you let Russia do what they want, you let them fall apart. Now you have a vassal state that belongs to you. It's like your sidecar on your motorcycle if you're China.
She's sitting there saying, I can't believe my good luck.
Yeah, yeah.
I now have, for the first time in the history of the world, I now have Russia, the largest country geographically in the world, mm-hmm. as my vassal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
I mean, do you see that? Because that's kind of what I see happening.
Because
I don't know how this ends with Russia anywhere but a defeated state like that. That China, they have to have China. They have to be connected to sell oil and natural gas to them. It's whatever the Chinese want. They're there to service them.
That's right. So, and the Chinese are going to treat Russia like they treat their other vassal states. They'll dictate the terms of the relationship. So Vladimir Putin has given up any idea of Russian true sovereignty by allowing the Chinese to become their senior partner.
So in this attempt for this, and I think there are some many other reasons underneath this overall, but this propaganda is they're putting the band back together. He's going to reunite the Russo people, right? He's going to reunite this great empire here. So in stretching, in Icarus flying too close to the sun, it ends up being lesser than when he started this.
He is going to be much lesser. And I don't think he sees it, Sean. I think he, in his own mind, has himself convinced that he's creating this great Eurasian landmass that he's going to control. No, he's not. It's all going to be dictated by China.
So if this doesn't work for him, they're actually in a worse place than they were when he started this.
Yes.
Okay, let's who knows what he thinks? I know there's a television, radio full of people telling you what Putin thinks, but I got to just guess. This idea that this renewed interest in the East, of course, it's been going on since 2014. Do you think that it's to the Dnieper River and then that's it? Maybe this idea that he thinks, okay, well, I can't get the whole thing, because I want to go the other way in a second, talk about him taking the whole thing and more. But does he go, and what does the world do? Let's say he moves some kind of line there, somewhere between the Donbass and the Dnieper, or to the Dnieper on the border of Kyiv, and say, okay, now this is Russia, no more problems. Does the world just go, well, all right.
No, he's crossed the line permanently.
They can't go back to normal?
Mm-mm. No, it's this. He has made a historic, tragic mistake, and no one will ever trust him again. I mean, he lies. They all lie. So I wouldn't believe anything that they say.
Still on the Security Council, Russia, by the way.
Okay. I mean, but right now, I mean, I think you've got to assume they're going to keep on going to the end.
There's the question, and lucky for the tease there, we're up against a news break. What is the end? And those are some of the questions I have for you, Congressman Byrne. When we come back, we'll also get yours on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. One of the stories that had popped up in the Times, I think, in the Telegraph, that the United Kingdom now has special forces inside Ukraine training. I know we have U.S. military training Ukrainians use the equipment outside of Ukraine, but now this story out today, United Kingdom has their special forces inside the borders of Ukraine. Have we stepped into a new part of this in international level? We'll talk about that with the congressman a lot more when we come back right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Yeah, to Paul's text, we'll get to that one a little bit too. We talked about it before, but they're wondering what the congressman's doing with his time these days. We'll get to that, but right now I got to continue these questions here. And I guess we need to repeat too what we had talked about in the past, not only Armed Services Committee, but you met with Ukrainians. You met with these folks. You told me last time you met, and that was what, 20, what year?
2015.
And at that point, you walked away from a meeting with them and said, you knew back then they were serious.
Absolutely. I remember it was a group of us. We were actually met with them in Berlin, and in the group was Senator Manchin. And we listened to them, and they left the room, shook their hands and everything. He turned and looked at me, and he said, I think they're serious. I said, Senator, I think they are absolutely serious. So you can
about defending themselves to the last.
Yeah, I mean,
last square inch.
When their then president, Ukrainian president, came and spoke to the joint session of Congress, he said, "Our country's motto is your country's motto from the revolution: live free or die." And they mean it.
Well,
they're willing to die. These are not Afghans, okay?
Yeah.
And this is not like what we experienced over there. This is completely different.
What we're what we're seeing here is that kind of stick-to-itiveness, Mariupol or other battles we could talk about. But yes, you did say at the beginning that if they would have only had rocks, they would have been throwing those at the soldiers. But this is a different story because of the American lethal aid,
yep.
Right? So if you're looking at this, and it's Putin that we're talking about here, when do you lash out? When you realize that you're losing because, now we can get into the becauses, and we probably will here, you're losing because, fill in the blank, but to Putin, it'd be easier for him to say, because the damn Americans are putting all this munition in here for the war, not because my military is ill-prepared, my command structure is bad, but...
Yeah, his military is saying exactly that we're the cause for the war. If we would quit giving these munitions to Ukrainians, they wouldn't be able to fight, and they could wrap this war up pretty quickly. That's what the Russians want, wrap this thing up quickly. Well, the part of the problem they've got here is not just the Ukrainian willingness to fight, but the lack of preparedness on the part of the Russian forces. I mean, some of their equipment clearly has not been adequately maintained.
How do you get to that point, Congressman?
Because they're corrupt.
Explain the corruption.
The Russian Army give me a contract to produce trucks,
okay,
just to carry stuff back and forth.
Okay.
And I give you trucks, but they're not the top-of-the-line trucks that you contracted for. And now you've got a bunch of, not-so-good trucks out there that are breaking down all the time. You have to have the very best equipment that's maintained at the very highest level for it to stand up to the rigors of combat. And clearly the Russians don't have that.
So the corrupt military official, who's probably getting, I'm just guessing here, a kickback from the contractor that's putting out the subpar equipment, is not going to report when they call down the line and say, all right, we're going in after Winter Olympics, we're going in. Are you ready? Vladimir Sullivan? Yes, I am, sir. Well, right, even though I know I'm not because
it's been corruption up and down.
That's all over
the place. It's not just in here or there. It's all over the system. And that's how Putin got into power, was by playing footsies with people who were corrupt. And he's got more corrupt than they were. He got more effective at being corrupt. So that's part of the problem. They don't have adequate training for their personnel. They have a lot of conscripts in there that are there for a year, and that's it. And they have this command and control structure where they don't use non-commissioned officers or even young lieutenant types or captains.
Right, it's very different than ours, right?
I mean, very top-down.
People can't make, and this is just things I've read and studied, didn't know this before this all started, they can't make the individual decisions on the battlefield the way our commanders can.
Right. Some boxer said, everybody's got a plan before they're smacked in the mouth.
Mike Tyson, yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, and it's true for us in D-Day. I mean, everything went wrong. Everything the general's plan went wrong. And all these lieutenants and captains and non-commissioned officers had to figure it out there on the beaches. And they did. And that's our system, and it works. That is not the Russian system. Everything's decided by some general, and the people down who are actually doing it, they don't have any choice in how they're doing it. That's why so many Russian generals have been killed in this war, because they're out there on the front lines.
Coming right back. More of our conversation with Congressman Bradley Byrne. Get your questions for the text line at 343-0106.
Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And good to have Bradley Byrne in studio. And talking about this as a perspective as a citizen, but also somebody with House Armed Services Committee and somebody who met with these Ukrainian leaders. back in 2015, and had a sense back then. You said you and Senator Manchin walked away from that saying that those folks were serious, and it's showing itself today.
Yeah. Back, the problem back then was that the Obama administration wouldn't send them any weapons.
Right. Let's talk about that and the Crimean situation. You know, this idea that this war has just broken out this year. We talked about the battle in the Donbass has been going on since 2014. Crimea annexed.
2014.
We didn't do this. We didn't bring in the lethal aid.
No, we gave them meals ready to eat.
Okay.
And blankets.
But I wasn't ranting on the radio then. I guess because it was this peninsula that was kind of over by Russia that, you know, shame on me, but I thought at that point, well, that's enough. That you know, and maybe I was being Chamberlain at that point.
Well, here was the thing back then, and frankly, to some extent, is the thing now. The reason they're not members of NATO is they didn't meet NATO requirements, particularly with their type of government. There's a lot of corruption in Ukraine.
Right. People have said that. People use that as like a gotcha there. You're not denying that.
No, of course
corruption
not. I personally agreed with that. I don't want to bring somebody into NATO that doesn't measure up to NATO standards. But all they asked for back then is lethal weapons. And for God's sake, if these people want to fight for themselves, give them to them. And oh, by the way, if Russia succeeds in taking the entire country of Ukraine, they're right there on NATO boundaries. They're right there on Poland's boundaries, mm-hmm. right there on Slovakia's boundaries. So we do have an interest, okay? And it's not just a moral interest, it's an actual interest.
Because that's where I'm looking at, because I hear a lot of saber rattling, and I want to get to this in a second here. But you have the NATO countries. You also, it's a country I focus on just geographically, and Dr. Joe Savage, who comes on this show, who does charity work with orphans in Moldova and Ukraine, and he's maybe very aware of Moldova. There's Moldova, a non-NATO country. Military, nothing like Ukraine's.
Yeah.
I mean, could be nothing. Would they push that far? I want to get to it in a second, but I do want to get this quote. So I saw this. This came out, I think over the weekend. I think it happened on Friday. And it was Senator, the guy they call the Biden Whisperer, Delaware Senator Chris Coons, calling for more American involvement. He said Putin will only stop when we stop him. Here's a quote. Say, Senator Coons says Congress and the White House should, quote, come to a common position about when we are willing to go to the next step and not just send arms but troops to the aid of the defense of Ukraine. If the answer is never, then we are inviting another level of escalation and brutality by Putin. Now, my worry here is, I've been since word go, I don't want the first American man or woman fighting the Russians in Ukraine. And second of all, worries me that they call Senator Coons the Biden Whisperer, that this person's in the ear of the president.
Yeah, I know Senator Coons personally,
okay.
And I like him personally, but I disagree with him about this. I think that there is a limit to what we should be willing to do. Providing lethal weapons is a good thing for us to do, but I don't want to see any American servicemen or women with boots on the ground over there, and I don't want our pilots in the skies. Now, what I said earlier holds true as well. What happens if he crosses a red line? What happens if he uses a tactical nuclear weapon? What happens if he uses chemical warfare? We're all going to have to go back to the drawing board and say, what kind of new world are we living in now? So I disagree with Senator Coons about that. I don't think he's a Biden Whisperer on that particular issue.
Okay.
I think he's more of a Biden Whisperer when it comes to domestic policy. But Senator Coons is very knowledgeable about foreign policy. I travel with him to South Africa. So I know he's got a pretty deep understanding of things. I just think he's gone too far, and I don't think the vast majority of people in Congress agree with him.
And that's my worry, Congressman, is that as somebody who does not want to see that, every time I hear the saber rattling, I guess this one got more attention to me because I just knew him as the Biden Whisperer, and it frightened me because I'm pro-Ukraine, I'm anti-Russian. It's funny that I would have to say that. I grew up an American, I'm anti-Russian. But I don't... This incremental turning the heat up a little bit. I just don't know where the can we exist at this level? Can we continue to pour deadly or lethal aid in there? Continue to support them monetarily, and it not go to a hot war? Is it possible? I mean,
yes.
we're towing a line here. It's a dangerous game.
I think it's possible, and I disagree with Senator Coons that he won't be stopped until we stop him. No, he'll be stopped when the Ukrainians stop him, and the Ukrainians are willing to do it themselves. Now, they do want us to get up in the air, which I disagree with. But they're doing a pretty good job of, you know, if not stopping him, slowing him pretty far down. So let's keep arming the Ukrainians. Let's keep them fighting. They're fighting for themselves, but they are fighting for a big international principle, and I think that's important as well.
Is there – we talked about that gap between Putin and the next in command, right, how big that chasm is. Is there any way to take him out?
No.
Lindsey Graham should
never have said that.
Oh, my gosh, and I agree with you, too, for an elected official to say it.
Crazy. There's no way we can take him out, okay?
Right.
No, and there's nobody around him that's going to take him
out. That's where I'm asking. I'm not asking us. I'm wondering when there's enough body bags coming into some town outside Moscow, you know, or somewhere in the Asian steppe, and the mothers.
The opinion polls in Russia show strong support. Now,
but they're getting a twisted...
But that's
reality,
what they know.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm only going to act on what I know and all I'm getting is state propaganda, then I'm getting the line that everything's going great.
Yeah.
Now, it is true that over time, not only body bags will come back home, but some of these wounded young Russian soldiers could come back home, and some of that's going to start percolating. But it's not going to get to the point where there's going to be some movement against him. Remember, there was a movement against Hitler in Germany, and mm-hmm. it failed.
Yeah.
And the only way we got Hitler was when we had him in a bunker, and he killed himself. Now, this guy Putin, that's him. He's going to have to be in a bunker and kill himself. But that ain't going to happen anytime soon, if ever at all.
You know, the sanction-wise, the non-military-wise, things we're doing against Russia, I wonder if that it would be more effective maybe than the lethal aid. But you don't think – if the living – and I hate it because, it's not every Russian citizen that has decided that this war is a good thing. But, you know, I mean, look at the bravery of those that have protested.
Yeah.
Y'all think y'all got stones? Y'all don't got stones.
Yeah.
If you're in Moscow protesting where you get disappeared.
Pretty significant that anybody was willing to do it. There just isn't any room for anything like that in that country. So that country's going to hang with him. Now, he's not going to pay the price so much as the average ordinary Russian citizen will pay that price.
Right.
They won't starve to death because Russia can feed itself, but they won't live a very high quality life either. And they're cut off from most of the world that's worth knowing about. So they're going to be finding themselves getting to take their summer vacations in Beijing.
Right.
Trust me, if somebody's been to Beijing,
yes.
Ain't the same thing as going to Miami.
Yeah. And the power of the oligarchs there that gets that discussion is tamped down some over the last few weeks when, you know, it was yacht search and all that kind of stuff. But their relationship to Putin.
They work for Putin.
It is that way. Then.
Yeah.
He doesn't work for he's not the oligarchs have decided this is our leader because he makes things good for business.
Well, originally that's how he got to power in 1999. But over time, he's whittled. If you've noticed, he's whittled all those guys away.
Mm-hmm.
The new oligarchs are all his buddies that owe everything they have to him. So, no, they're not going to do it. This is where their bread is butter. They're going to stay there.
Do you see response in the world stage? I want to talk about NATO in a second, but first of all, the UN. So this is this thing that I read a lot.
What a joke. The UN is a joke.
It has been. I said that in high school during Model UN here in Mobile, and it's been living with me all the decades since. But to have a scenario where you have Russia on the – not let alone a member of
– chairing the Security Council. Chairing it.
Does that not – isn't that a time now we just say enough? I mean, is it
– It is for me. I mean, what has the UN done from beginning to end in this thing? Nothing.
Nothing.
Zero. Why are we sending money to the UN peace thing when they can't even – speak out about peace there. I mean, they spoke out, had that resolution against the war at the beginning.
Yeah, and then
Big deal. Huh. The UN is a feckless group of people that are, we just formed something different.
Yeah.
Because the UN ain't it.
What about the other, speaking of something different, NATO and the other NATO countries, let's look at the Baltic states that have, worried themselves frontline for Russia and other states now thinking, well, maybe we need to join this
Sweden.
Group. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. We get a huge northern thing on the top flank of NATO that is really a limiting factor for Russia. So I'm all for letting Finland and Sweden in. I was not for letting Ukraine in. Still not for letting Ukraine in. And I have a few questions about a present member named Turkey, but that's a different story altogether.
Do we know each other? Because you know, people know that's one of my favorite things to decry. Is Turkey's involvement in United Nations. I understand in realpolitik and geography, but...
Well, my interactions with Turkish officials was disappointing, to put it mildly. They're playing footsies with all the wrong people, and it's disappointing that a NATO ally would do that. But on that northern part of NATO's flank, I think having Finland and Sweden would be a real benefit to the overall alliance, and I'm glad to see that they're thinking about it. Now... If anybody were rational over there in the Kremlin, they'd say, you know, this is not a good thing that Finland and Sweden are joining with NATO.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all over there cowered under their desks while Putin says it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. It matters a lot.
But here's my worry about the further escalation is if he stops now, today, we just said it, a vassal state of China, much diminished on the world stage.
Right.
So he almost doesn't have a... It's either go. It's a go for broke. We're going to the break here, but we'll come back. We'll talk about that more with Congressman Byrne. Got some questions here, too, from the text line. So we'll get there. They're wondering what you're doing with your time and what you might do next. So that's coming up. Get ready.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. It's Midday Mobile, conversation with Bradley Byrne. Congressman, I want to read a couple of these, but they're the folks that think we're following the wrong route here. Unnamed texter here, although I have others that have asked about this. I'll read this one. If the American people to continue to buy into this propaganda effort, even after all the many examples of failure from Vietnam to Iraq to Afghanistan, the American people at the end of the day are viewed by our elites as just being expendable as the Mujahideen, the Vietnamese, the Iraqis, or all the other people that were taken by this false song of globalism. Stay out of Ukraine. Stop funding the war. Enough said. Your reaction to that?
Well, I don't want to see American troops in Ukraine, and I think that's a critical difference. But you talk about don't buy in the globalist stuff. We are all affected by what's happening around the world. I mean, we live in a port city.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't, you know, close off America. That doesn't mean America has to be involved everywhere. I happen to have agreed with President Trump's decision we needed to pull out of the Middle East, that we had done what we could do there, it's time mm-hmm. to go. So I agree with that, and I thought it was a big mistake for us to be in as many different African countries as we were until recently.
And Ukraine's not nation building. I mean, they had already built a nation.
I don't feel the need to save Ukraine from the clutches of Russia. I want them to save themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what impresses me about them. They're willing to do it themselves. I'm not asking our men and women to go over there and do it. They're willing to stand up for their own freedom. And I do think we have an interest with that, and particularly when they're that close to our NATO boundaries.
Keith says, Bradley Burns is an awesome dude. It's hard to fathom. He's still not a part of Congress or the Senate, but that's just how things work out. Can we count on him to get back in there at the earliest possible time? Congressman, any plans?
No plans at all.
What are you doing with your time?
So I'm practicing law again. You know, people say, oh, you had a political career. I said, no, I had a legal career. I had a political thing that I did over on the side for a few years. So I'm back to the practice of law. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm making all the young people at the firm do the hard work.
There you go.
And I'm enjoying myself. So this is a new part of my life, and I'm enjoying it.
Let's talk a little bit about that. So right now with the Senate race going on.
Yeah.
So as somebody that has knowledge in this, you know, time in the trenches, what do you see in the Senate race? Do you think the turnaround here from it was Mo Brooks, Congressman Brooks, is to lose,
yeah,
right? Then now he's in third position. Were you surprised about that change?
No, I sensed that the Trump people and Trump himself was pulling away from Mo, and he did. He made it official. And I think that pretty much undermined what my friend Mo Brooks will be able to accomplish. I think Mo's going to come in third, and I think he probably knows he's going to come in third. This is the top of the ticket that's really interesting to me.
This Durant effect? I mean,
I got to meet him finally.
You know,
I told you I never met him.
Right, and a lot of people have said, you know, we hear his radio commercials or see his TV ads, but we hadn't seen him in person. He was in that chair right there, but a long time ago when he released his book, but I hadn't seen him since.
Well, he was here, it was at least a few weeks ago, and he and I sat down and had lunch together.
What'd you think?
I was impressed. I asked the sort of same questions of everybody. Why you run? What do you hope to accomplish? And he had good substantive answers to every one of those questions. I mean, this guy didn't just fall off a turnip truck. You know, he had pretty substantial positions in the armed forces, built a pretty substantial company. He's got very different ideas about defense and foreign policy. He's got some very different ideas about what the government should and shouldn't do with regard to business, et cetera. So, I think he could be a good senator. Now, he doesn't have that level of expertise or experience that Katie Britt does.
Right.
So, he wouldn't land there the first day and just hit the ground running like she would. But he's a smart guy. He'll figure it out quick enough.
So, yeah, I mean, because that's one of the questions. Think about your matriculation, of course, a legal career, but your involvement in politics and state politics leading you to that point. You've got a lot of people now that they don't run for mayor or boards or dog catcher even. They go, yeah, I'm going to run for House or Senate.
Or you got a guy that's going to come on your show that's running for governor.
Yes.
You never had. You know, politics is the only field I know of where not having any experience is a good thing.
Yeah.
Stop and think about it. It's kind
of
weird.
It's a plank of a platform for a lot of folks that are running.
I mean, if you were the athletic director at the University of Alabama, would you hire a new head football coach for Alabama that had never coached before?
No.
We do that in politics.
Yeah. And we celebrate it in politics.
We do. And I think we need to think about that again. I really do.
What about the, you talking about pulling the Trump endorsement. So it's now, it's in there. The ball's in there. You've got Durant. You've got Britt. There's been, you know, rumor mill, the stuff that we get here, that it's one week, oh, it's going to Durant. One week, oh, it's going to Britt because of Wesley Britt. And he, like, what do you feel? Who gets it?
Well,
is that a 1 or 2 point effect? Is it a 10 point effect? What do you think?
I don't know which of these polls to believe anymore. I mean, they're different. They're so different. It's hard to know what to believe. But Shelby's poured in an enormous amount of money. He's raised a bunch of money for Katie. He's put in a bunch of money from his campaign account, and that money's going to have some effect. Now, what Durant's done is said, okay, you put in your chips, I'll put in my chips. And he's just loaned himself a whole bunch of other money. And he's got such a great backstory. So he's got something to sell. Now, Katie's smart as all get out. And she's a hard, hard, hard worker. And so she's going to keep slugging away. We're going to have a heck of a runoff between those two.
Yeah, and it's going to be a runoff.
I'm glad to be over on the sideline watching it.
What does that feel like? Because you know at a level beyond, I mean, even somebody like me that does this for a living looks at it, I've never actually done the thing, right? I'm the sports commentator that didn't play the game.
So it's exhausting. At this point in the campaign, you wake up every day.
35 days left, yeah.
Yeah, you wake up every day and you're tired because you don't ever get a chance to recuperate. And as I tell candidates all the time, you know, you get to sleep after the election's over. Katie calls me every now and then. We have a good conversation. I really like her a lot. Mm-hmm. Wesley, her husband, was the first person to send me a check when I ran for Congress. So I have tremendous...
Really?
Yeah. Wesley's a great guy. I have tremendous respect for her. I think she would be an excellent senator. I wanted to meet Durant because his story is fascinating. And I was worried that he had a fascinating story, but there was no there.
Right.
And I was pleased to find out there's real there with Mike Durant. I was really impressed with him.
That's a good piece of information because he's not been on this show yet as he's been running. Like I said, when his book came out and he was coming through town, I was like, yeah, Mike Durant, Black Hawk Down. Of course I know him. And he sat right here and I kind of stared at him going,
yeah,
you're the guy I watched on TV, but I knew that story. But I have wondered about the there, and you said
yes, they're there. But I told him, I'm saying this on air, so you know I mean it. He needs to spend more time down here because people down here don't know him.
That's correct,
and I think that's a problem he's got to deal with.
That is correct. All right, the last one on the politics side is former President Trump, the nominee in 2024.
If he runs, he will be. The question is he going to run? And I hear him saying that he is. And usually when he says stuff like that, he means it. But I sure would like for him to stand up, President Trump, and just say it. Just say it so we can all hear it. I think that would stop a lot of the speculation. And we all need to get...
It would take away a third of our shows, Congressman.
I'm sorry. Yeah. But it would help us get unified, and we need to get unified. This shooting at one another needs to stop. We got a major election ahead of us this fall and another major election in 2 years. I think we've got every reason in the world that we should be winning both of those elections, and we can get this country back to where it needs to be. But you know, politics is a strange thing. Who knows what's going to happen? Mike Pompeo was in town. I told you that earlier. I think if Donald Trump got up and said, I'm running, I think Mike would say, I'm not. So that would help bring some clarity for that.
Bring a lot of clarity to this show. I can't wait to get you back. Congressman, thank you.
I'll be back. Thank you.
All right. Hour number two on the way. As we mentioned, coming up, Lou Burdette running in the gubernatorial race here in Alabama. We'll talk to him straight ahead.